Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Reddy, but my friends call me Spanners. So, let's be friends. We've jumped online on a Wednesday to talk about all the things. I've been sitting here in the shed saying, don't talk about the things, but it is no longer avoidable, and we're going to talk about the things. We're also going to talk about whether domination is putting off audiences around the world, and we'll have a little look forward to the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. I'm joined by two people, one boring one. Matt, two rumpets. Yeah. Matt again.
Yeah, me again. Want to talk about tyres?
No. And we've got a much more interesting guest, also from America Land, from the Lebertard Show. It's Jessica Smetana. Hello, Jess.
Hi, justice for Matt. That was such a mean intro for him.
Yeah, but I'm used to him. Do you know what I mean? It's not, I take him for granted, and I think I've put the time in. If you've been with someone for 8 years, 9 years, you don't have to care about them anymore.
Are we talking about Matt now, or are we talking about Lewis Hamilton at Mercedes?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, or are we talking about your marriage? My marriage is fine.
Are we still talking about Matt? Okay.
No, the blame culture in our house is absolutely fine. That's, you know, it's not forever. We've only got to drive and grind towards death. But yeah, there's a lot of relationships falling down in Formula One. Everyone's kind of got used to the fact now that Lewis Hamilton is not going to be at Mercedes. But he was a bit cheeky in the interviews, really, sort of stirring things up, going, oh, yeah, no, I reckon Max Verstappen's number one on the hit list for Mercedes. So that might be a really good place to start. Let's just do our if, that Max Verstappen goes to Mercedes, how do you see that playing out, Jess?
I couldn't even fathom that like a month ago. But at this point, with the slow trickle of news since the beginning of February, when we found out that there was this Red Bull investigation going on, and most recently with the news that Max's dad was not happy with Red Bull, and he seems to be a very important person to Max and someone whose opinion matters to him.
Yeah.
Nothing really would shock me at all at this point. The Mercedes car going from the Red Bull and what it is now, which I think will be a little bit of the topic that we'll talk about later, to the Mercedes, though, given, you know, we only have one data point so far this season. Is that really something that Max would want to do? Is that really something that he would be okay with?
Well, this is it. We've got to sort of work backwards, really, I think. And look, we're going to get into some stuff. And I apologize to the Missed Apex audience. I've been really putting off talking about the whole Christian Horner stuff because I felt like it wasn't really a motorsport story. But it is very much becoming a motorsport story. And as I was saying to Jess offline, I feel like there's already a lot of really dumb opinions from middle-class men. And so I was a bit reluctant to add yet another dumb middle-aged. Did I say middle-class? promoted myself there, didn't I? But we're gonna be brave and we're gonna talk about it. But I think actually one of the most fascinating sporting questions is, let's say it's done, Max Verstappen ends up there. I genuinely think there are Max Verstappens out there, fans out there, who think if Verstappen was in last year's Mercedes, if Verstappen was in last year's Ferrari, he would have still been world champion. That's how much of an aura and a legend he has around him.
That is interesting. And just as a data point, I'd like to see that. If we get a chance to find that out, I think that would be fascinating. And if you're someone that's worried about Formula One's ratings or maybe the perceived plateau that the ratings may have come to in the United States, which, you know, maybe a lot of television executives are interested in that. That would be a fascinating way to drum up some interest for next year's season, on top of course, the Lewis to Ferrari storyline that is already in place.
The problem we've got, Matt, is that the Verstappen in that Red Bull is so far ahead of Perez that there's almost like a giddy excitement at the prospect that if you remove Verstappen from there, there's probably no one else who can drive that car. So if he left tomorrow, there's no one else that's going to jump in that car and be able to drive it in that exact same pointy way that all his teammates have complained about. So you could almost level the field in one foul swoop by swapping any, like Gasly. Stick Gasly in there for Verstappen, and you've probably got two Perez-level drivers at the moment in that specific car. You know, you'd have to really change the car to suit them.
I mean, you know, there's always potentially somebody out there who could perform at the level of Max in that car, but the likelihood of that is probably very, very low. The thing that strikes me, though, is that I think the Max to Mercedes thing, as much as anything else, is in Formula One, you know, when your opponent is down, you want to be sure and kick them in the teeth a couple of times. And if I'm Toto Wolff and I've suffered through all this passive aggressive crap that Christian Horner has been dishing out to me, well, what better retribution than to start talking about his star driver coming to the team, as, you know, we're getting every day new revelations about the massive amount of corporate warfare at Red Bull.
Right. That's where the story, when you texted me to ask me if I wanted to come on the show and talk about, like, what should Formula One essentially do something about Red Bull and their dominance? I was like, well, it's kind of hard to unravel that from what's happening right now at the corporate level, because there is all of this turmoil. It doesn't seem to, there doesn't seem to be any end in sight to any of it, right? Like, it seemed like maybe before the season there would be some resolution. And in fact, things have only gotten worse in the last week since Red Bull said that there wouldn't be any sort of punishment given. So I am really curious to see where this lands. And now we're in the middle of a season where there are going to be continued press availabilities now for, you know, however many weeks. So I think a lot will happen in probably a short amount of time, because the way that this has been handled has left so much to be desired.
So the press initially were really kid glove about it. It was kind of like a wait and see, we'll have statements come out. But it's unavoidable now that every question does revolve around those politics. So even Verstappen was asked, arriving at track, your dad said Christian Horner's, you know, a baddie and he's got to go. What do you think? Are you committed to the future at Red Bull? And here's the thing with all these conspiracies and rumours, and when we don't really know anything, there's plenty of opportunities to give a clear answer. So Verstappen could have gone, nope, I'm staying. Come what may, I'm staying. And he said, well, I guess things would have to get pretty wild if I was to go. Definitely left himself like a big door. But that relationship with his father, Jess, is, you know, people really are convinced, I think, that Jos Verstappen is all but the decision maker in Max's life.
Right. And I can see why, right? He's at every race. He talks to the media very often. He is someone who himself is a bit of a celebrity within Formula One.
Yeah.
Certainly Max has never like come out and been like, no, my dad doesn't have anything to do with me. They're very much linked together. I don't know, but trumpets, I'm curious what your take is.
Oh, well, to me, this is like fascinating. Because if we wind the clock backwards to about 2012, you have Lewis Hamilton's father essentially being this same person in the paddock. And there came a point where Lewis said, Dad, I love you, but you gotta go. And I'm wondering, are we will we approach this point? If it gets serious enough, will Max take a look around him and go, you know, I'm beginning to think this advice you're giving me may not be the best advice, Dad.
Oh, I don't know. It feels a bit stronger than the Lewis Hamilton, Anthony Hamilton one. Hamilton was much more formally the manager, wasn't he? The manager agent. So when that relationship sort of fell apart in a professional sense, I think you then went on to manage other drivers, including Paul de Resta. And that didn't end well at all. So I think this might be a little bit different. I feel like the level of control or perceived control is higher. And Verstappen is always telling these stories of fear. And of course, we're psychoanalyzing a father-son relationship that we weren't present for. But he's certainly not shy of, oh, yeah, my dad left me at a petrol station. Oh, yeah, my dad stabbed a mechanic with a fork for getting something wrong with me. So he definitely paints this impression of a very controlling person. That is the image. Legally, I'm not saying whether that's true or not. See the mess I'm getting myself in, Jess. This is why I don't normally cover this kind of content.
Well, to be fair, it is very tricky because there has been, like I said, such a slow trickle of information. And I think what a lot of fans and even people inside F1 were hoping for was a little bit of transparency. For example, if you're going to clear someone of wrongdoing, it would be helpful to know why. It would be helpful to know how that conclusion was reached. It would be helpful to have any sort of insight into that process at all. I mean, obviously, you need to be sensitive to the identities of people who are involved, who are not public figures, who maybe do not want to be dragged into any sort of public ordeal. And that is super important. But I think there is a responsible way for a company to either back an employee or not back an employee that doesn't leave so much to be desired from people who are going to now see this person on TV almost, you know, every day for the next several weeks, several months, who is one of the faces of the sport. And you should at some point be able to talk about it without, you know, being afraid of getting sued or afraid of like, you know, saying the wrong thing. Like this clearly.
Yeah. Okay.
These allegations happened. We don't know whether the email that was sent includes, you know, real screenshots or not. Those things are still up in the air, but the parent company level at Red Bull has insight to it and has not shared any of that with the public.
Yeah, we can be a little braver than we've been, Matt. So, for example, like it all comes down to the Christian, you know, Horner thing. Why was that leaked in the first place? So, you know, that they didn't choose to go, oh, by the way, we're investigating Christian Horner. And Christian Horner is, you know, one of the very, very top figures. Christian Horner is kind of Mr. F1, has won all the championships, has made himself a bit of a star of Drive to Survive. And let's be honest, is very much linked with characters in the FIA at the very top of the sport as well. So he's a very powerful man in Formula One. So these allegations get leaked. The wider Red Bull group has to respond and they say, okay, the case has been dismissed. And then immediately this dossier of screenshots comes out. And then we are guessing. And Jessica, you're really right and responsible to go, we don't know if those were real. But also, it would have been very easy for Christian Horner to come out and say, you know, I know there's a Google Drive link that everyone's seen. Those aren't real. Yeah. So what we don't have is, you know, a wider context or there's rumors that more is going to get leaked. But that's like messy. The fact that they didn't want to release it. They didn't want to talk about it. Someone's leaked it to the press. It turned out that it was true that there was an allegation. Then immediately after that, it's leaked. And then when Mohammed Ben Sulayem reportedly asks Max to support Christian Horner, then stuff about the FIA president and him fixing results and stewarding and trying to block Las Vegas comes out. So this is the core of our sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even if you don't believe that these allegations are true because you need more evidence or whatever your reasoning is, I think let's pretend for a second that they are true. And there is a victim here and there is someone who has been harassed by someone that they work with. Think about the position that they're in where it seems as though this person has taken that complaint to the proper channels. And yet now, probably potentially against their will, it's being dragged into a political fight among some of the most powerful people in the sport. I don't imagine, first of all, it doesn't make your company look good and it doesn't make you, anyone else as an employee, feel safe in that workplace. And I imagine that is another aspect of this that there hasn't been much reporting on yet, because as we normally see in these types of situations, it turns into a power struggle. It turns into sort of more than just one person and their discomfort at work. It turns into something more insidious, and there's more motives in play there.
Yeah. And the thing that baffles me most is, here in America, we have a saying, it's not the crime, it's the cover up. Goes back in politics a ways. And if I look at this situation, I'm still sitting here with my jaw on the ground that they just didn't say, well, we've investigated. Turns out Mr. Hunter has been naughty. He's gone for some re-education. He has an apology. We've come to a settlement with the affected employee. As far as we're concerned, the matter is closed. If they had done that, there would be no leverage left for Horner's enemies inside the corporation. And so it's baffling to me, because what's happened is, and I think, Jessica, you're absolutely right, what's happened here is the one person who really privacy should be respected has turned into essential, is being used as a tool by both sides. And that's the worst possible outcome. Has been turned into a real victim in this. And it's the worst look for Formula One, I think.
But it's fascinating that there's sides at all. Like, what caused these rifts? There clearly is sides. So it looks like the FIA president is clearly on the side of Christian Horner. And when he called for support, appears to have paid the price for that with his own whistleblower leak. You know, you need a little chart to track the clans. And who's on what side, when we should be concentrating on some racing.
Right. Well, and I think it also probably can go back years in terms of the sides that people are on. There have been stories about F1 and the FIA not getting along now since, I mean, probably forever, but just most recently, in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. There's every few months, there's this slow trickle of, Formula One's not happy with this. Formula One's not happy with that.
And well, Andretti, isn't it? That's the biggest rift point.
That's another big thing, exactly. And at the same time, I think there's also, you know, been all these rumors about Red Bull and the structure of their company and what the kind of power vacuum has been left over the last year and a half since their founder died, of course. So there are all sorts of other things at play that maybe are go back a lot further than this timeline of allegations. But yeah, like Matt said, it now leaves real people in the middle of it who may be innocent of having any sort of connection to those issues.
Well, one of the key things going around in the rumor mill is that the Verstappens now are basically trying to get out of the contract that Max Verstappen is in. And you go, well, why? And then, you know, there's been some fake stuff from Ford. And then there's been some, you know, there was a real statement from Ford saying, where's the transparency? So that mm-hmm. that was a real letter. Then there was a fake one saying Ford have pulled out of the 2026 thing. So, you know, clearly Ford aren't happy, and that's their engine for 2026. If you want to speculate wildly, and I do, what if the Ford engine is going to be a dud, the 2026 regs? It doesn't look good for them in the same way it didn't in 2013. And now they seem to be making these moves towards Mercedes, and Mercedes aren't helping with that rumour mill. So at the moment, I'm choosing to believe that Verstappen is Mercedes bound, or at least there's a chance, which is mad.
Also worth noting, as far as I've seen, I don't think any of Red Bull's other partners, sponsors, anyone has made any sort of statement. I could be wrong about that, but that is something interesting. When the Ford comment came out, I was curious if anyone else had spoken out about it. But yeah, it seems like people want to not have, want, they don't want to touch it for whatever reason, and I get why it's messy, but yeah.
So if Verstappen moves to Red Bull, moves to Mercedes, the one thing that will make me happy is that everyone will know what I went through as a Hamilton fan with the announcement to Ferrari, and I was like initially crushed, and then now, as we all know, I am nearly ready to become a lifelong Ferrari fan at the beginning of next season. I already have a hat, and I've got a Ferrari onesie as well. Those are things that are real, and I can prove it. So Verstappen fans, I'm really curious how they will respond to then seeing Verstappen go over to, you know, the big enemy, really. And I wonder how quickly they'll adapt. I hope poorly. I hope they do as poorly as I did with my... Go on, Matt.
They'll adapt just as rapidly as Lewis Hamilton fans did when he moved to Mercedes and after a year started winning every world championship in sight. If he's successful at Mercedes, they'll get over themselves pretty quickly. If, however, he suffers some more years in the wilderness, which honestly, until the new regulations is a real possibility, then it will be a test for them, because they have certainly set up Mercedes to be the big baddie in their universe of supporting Verstappen. Not all of them, of course, but.
I'm curious to find out also, like, who is it worse for? Like, let's say Horner sticks around. Sounds like someone is F1 racing outside my apartment.
Yeah,
I don't know
that.
If you can hear that. Let's say Horner doesn't get punished in any way. He's around next season. They have to replace Max. And now you're replacing Lewis with Max at Mercedes. Who finishes higher? Mystery driver in the Red Bull or Max in the Mercedes that has struggled? Because I think one of the interesting things about Red Bull and their domination over the last couple seasons is not only is their car so much faster, it's that Max has been able to thrive in a company where they're very rarely making mistakes on race day. They're very rarely picking the wrong tire strategy. They're very rarely making him suffer through 54-second pit stops. Like, it's a very efficient team, and there are so many things that they do well that even Mercedes has struggled with over the last season.
Or leave him completely on his own on the grid in the Hungarian Grand Prix with everybody else changing their tires and starting on the pit lane.
Right.
Yeah.
Or his seat hasn't broken yet. What else?
That was Hamilton from the last week. He said something broke on his seat, so he had one butt cheek up in the air and then one butt cheek had fallen down.
Yeah.
So operationally, Red Bull have been just incredible and on it. And even when they were a little bit behind, I would say from 2013, and it was a long journey for them to catch up, very much the third place car when Ferrari were challenging Mercedes 2017-2018, still though, operationally great. Pit stops great, strategy great, development great. So you're up. Verstappen is he going to be able to adapt to Mercedes where it doesn't always fire? I mean, look at this weekend. Apart from, if they had a good weekend, apart from the cooling, the seat breaking, the strategy calls, set up change direction between Friday and Saturday. But apart from that, Matt, had a great weekend.
Well, in context, if you look at them this time last year, it was, with all of that, a great weekend. But it just suddenly occurred to me, we're not talking about the real victims here if Max goes to Mercedes.
Russell
fans are going to take it on the chin,
aren't
they?
Poor Alex Van Gene. Yeah. So, I mean, George Russell asked about that. He's saying all the right things. What can you say? You have to go, I would welcome any challenge. I could beat any driver. And that's what he said. He goes, I can beat any driver. You have to believe that as an F1 driver, I'm sure. But the last 2 years shows maybe he hasn't got the Sunday pace of Lewis Hamilton. If he's honest, what?
Come on. He can't even beat a washed up, a vintage Hamilton.
Yeah. So he's got, you could argue, is Hamilton is probably not going to suddenly get faster from where he is here. But Verstappen is absolutely 100% undeniably in his prime. The man of the moment, absolutely on fire, dominating Formula One. It's a pretty good act, I think, from Russell to go, that's not a concern. It has to be.
It's very interesting in a sport where you have legends of the sport driving into their 40s. There's this generation of drivers right now stuck in between, one of the greatest drivers of all time to ever do it, and some of these older drivers like Alonso, who, wouldn't shock anyone if he wins a race here or there.
No.
Even in this, worse-ish Aston Martin compared to this time last year. And you have all of the, very young drivers coming in. And then you've got like the Landos, the Russells, that kind of like very good, like the Carlos Sainz. I feel like Russell's now in this kind of odd sitting duck Carlos Sainz position if this is something that's to come to fruition, where it's like these are very, very good drivers, very talented drivers that are just stuck right now in between these two, Max Verstappen, Lewis Hamilton sandwich, I guess. And I nothing metaphorically would make that more true than if they're both, literally stuck in that Mercedes sandwich.
Yeah, because you have, with these periods of domination, you can have whole generations of drivers that never really, that get their shot. So, you could have that, Norris, Albon, Gasly generation sort of skip out almost and then see how they respond when the exciting Antonellis come through. But the problem with Formula One is very much like that title fight. So, Anthony Joshua was going around bullying everyone in the heavyweight division, has that one fight against Ruiz, and everyone's kind of like, is he though? And it's taken a long time for Joshua to kind of show himself again on that heavyweight scene. And I think that happens with drivers. When you lose a teammate battle, your stock, suddenly plummets. Now, Perez's stock is in the dirt right now. But if he'd have taken the Williams seat instead, I think everyone would be talking about how he's dragging a Williams, an underperforming Williams, up into the points every time. So I think, yeah, Russell should be nervous. I don't think if you take a survey of 1,000 F1 fans, only Alex Van Gien will say Russell has a chance against Max Verstappen. I don't think anyone gives him a chance. Is that unfair?
I wanted you to put a percentage on what, like, in your view, you've been a fan of Formula One much longer than I have. That's not an age joke. I am one of those Americans who
you can get both things at once here.
But I'm one of those American fans that everyone hates who only started watching like 5 years ago. But do you really take any sort of stock into these Max to Mercedes rumors, or do you think this is all just public pressure and leverage unfolding, and in a few months everything will be fine?
Well, I don't think I'm the barometer, because if you'd have said about the Hamilton thing, I think all the way up to the announcement, I was in denial, going, no, of course not. Don't be so silly. But it's just the noises that are being made. So Verstappen this morning could have turned up at the track and said, no, I'm committed to Red Bull long term. He didn't. He left the door wide open. You know, his dad didn't have to go kicking off demanding that Horner be dismissed, and he has. And Mercedes, I don't know whether they're being cheeky or not, but basically everyone at Mercedes is openly talking about Verstappen being a viable candidate.
So what percentage? Like 60-40, 70-30?
Oh, so I have to make a bet. Yeah. Okay. I think it's happening. Okay, but I'll change my bet if Horner leaves. Then I'll change my bet again. But I think that, if we're guessing, I think the motivation is they want him out of there for some reason. Matt, what's your bet? Yeah, you make a bet and then I'll edit it.
I was simply going to say, when you're playing cards and you bluff at a certain point, it is too late to fold. I don't think we're quite there yet with the Max to Mercedes rumors, but at a certain point, it's going to be a real thing, because the people behind it didn't get what they want. And what they seem to want is Horner no longer involved with the team.
Okay. And so this is where we get to the point of, we don't really want to just be guessing now, you know, what we think will happen, because you're guessing on a case where we've run out of the point of where we have viable evidence. I could give you my opinion of what I thought after seeing those WhatsApp messages, but I don't see why I should open myself up to ending my career just yet. I've got a couple of years left in me.
I do think, though, this is where Christian Horner's importance in the sport comes into play, because I think it's fair to us, like, there's a standard that seems to be different for certain people, and it's fascinating to see. I'm not really sure who can ask for integrity from the investigation. Like, who is left to ask for some transparency here? If clearly, like, Ford is the only company kind of related to Red Bull that has done this, or at least that I'm aware of, surely, like, we would know if the FIA was trying to get involved in it. That was something that came up last weekend with comments from some of the team principals, and it doesn't seem to have happened. So who is left to ask for some accountability here in the process?
Well, I think the FIA should have been the agency properly to ask for accountability there. They have, I call it a morals clause, but, you know, it's a disrepute, you know, and we have this in football. As an athlete, when you sign, you're not allowed to bring the team into disrepute. They have a similar thing in Formula One.
But instead, the FIA president seems to, I don't know how confirmed that is, have been asking for him to be supported,
right,
publicly.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it already, it's gone off the rails. So who is left? And Domenic Holiday and Liberty are left. And at the point at which they see damage being done to their product that's significant enough, then they might sit all the principals down in a room and have a small talk with them. But really, it's the FIA that has the regulatory authority here to intervene.
Sadly, you've said something there. You've said, if they see their product is being damaged, they might be spurred into doing an investigation, which is sad, because shouldn't it be, we think a bad thing has happened under our watch, let's investigate that to at least assure ourselves that it hasn't.
Right. We have a duty to people that work for us, whether directly or indirectly, to protect them and to have like a safe working environment. Of course, these are things that like all companies say that they do. And then, of course, very rarely follow through on and care more about their public image than any sort of, you know, actual morality. But
it's
heavy. Say that about any sport. This is like every sport that I cover, at least, or talk about in the U.S. here has dealt with these exact same issues over the last, you could probably say, 2 weeks.
Yeah, because the number one thing, and Liberty is a corporation, and corporations, no matter what the Supreme Court might occasionally say over here, are not people. They are solely organized around profit and maximizing value to shareholders. That's what matters to them most. If they can do other things and be nice about it, some corporations do, some corporations don't. But the bottom line for them legally is maximizing that number for their shareholders. And it is set. I agree with you. I wish more companies would step up and realize that the safety of the people who work for them and work for their vendors is something they should always be concerned about, because it makes it better for everybody.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, a bit of a stressy one to get you on for again, finally, Jess. Sorry, we'll move on to a fun topic now. All I would say is, you know, I've been asked to comment loads about this since it's all been breaking. And I just don't think, if you look at the core issue of it and the demographic of person I am, I don't think I'm a person to make any kind of judgment calls on hypothetical situations of things that we don't have those details about. And I'm seeing an awful lot of people in my demographic really positing opinions of what it must be like for the people and characters in those positions. And I don't feel that is for me to say or to make a judgment on. And I wish a lot of the journos out there that are reporting would keep to that same line as well. Did I get away with it, Matt? Are we off air? We're gonna get
we'll find out in about 24 hours.
Okay, cool. Well, check the mail. Let's talk about what I wanted to bring Jess on to talk about. And we got two Americans, so that works out good. How do American sports deal with sports sort of deal with the domination factor? So in Formula One, we're sort of used to this level of domination. I think, you know, last year I'd got to the point where I was saying, you know, this is normal in F1. This is normal. You know, you can't, if you're going to be part of the F1 fan world, this kind of thing happens. And then it ticked over to this season and it looks like it might be happening again. And to me, that's kind of, now it's gone over the line. It's gone over the limit where I can't really point to examples where it's been quite like this. And I've gone from, hey, come on, you liked it before, now watch this bit. It's gone from that to now I wouldn't tell anybody they have to sit through another season of this. I'm going to, but I'm chronically doomed and addicted. So I don't know, for the DTS fans, you've just outed yourself there, Jess. Are they going to suffer more than, say, you know, sweats like me?
That's a great question. I think from what I can tell, at least like from our audience, like when we cover Formula One on our show, it seems like the people in at least stateside, maybe you can lump them all in as DTS fans, that are still care about F1, like they're sticking with it now. Like it's maybe not their favorite sport, but it's something that they'll watch Saturday or Sunday morning, because it is such a, I mean, I don't have to explain to fans of your podcast why it's fun to watch, but you understand. But creating panic over like unfairness in sports is something that American media does for almost any sport all the time. It's constantly something that we argue and debate about. It happens in the NBA with, like, there was a whole panic about super teams for a few years. That seems to have ended when the Brooklyn Nets tried to create a super team and they ended up being very bad and sucking. So we don't panic about them anymore. But same with football. The Kansas City Chiefs just won their third Super Bowl in like 4 or 5 years, and people are already freaking out about how unfair that is. But there are, you know, the way that these teams are set up, it's through a draft process where the worst team in the league gets the best chances or gets automatically the top pick in next year's draft. So there's this hope from fans that every year you may get this generational player that will completely turn your franchise around.
So can you game that then? Can you tank a season or two to get down to get the pick?
Oh yeah. That is a huge issue, especially in the NBA. There have been rules created to prevent that sort of thing because there have been seasons where games are unwatchable. A team is not trying to win ever. So they can get that generational player in their draft. I know Trump is wants to get in here.
I was going to say, look, we have 11 professional basketball players on our bench, but there's a reason we've put our janitor in.
Yeah. there was accusations that the Miami Dolphins, believe it or not, from Miami, Florida, home of the Miami Grand Prix, tanked their season in, I can't remember what, 2017, 18, I can't remember, so that they could tank to get the best quarterback in the next year's draft. And that the NFL investigated it, and it was a very serious accusation. It was a very big deal. That is something that the sports try to litigate out, but is always something that teams will try to get around.
That's so interesting.
That they can, you know,
so do you think that's what Alpine started taking influence from? That is that what they're doing this season? Ryan Reynolds has come in and gone, do you know what, I've seen some American teams doing this. So the media there is happy to call a conspiracy out and be like, no, this is a fix, this is cheating, because the Britishness side of it is, I've seen things in F1 where I've gone, that's cheating. That I've seen cheating happens, and I'm happy to take a punt that's cheating. The pearl clutching in British society about that is unreal. Like, how dare you accuse professional sports people of cheating? It's like, yeah, of course, sometimes it is cheating, Matt.
Would you like to know a random and interesting statistic that I had to figure out for arguing with somebody else online earlier?
I'll be mad if you don't give it to me now.
Aston points up until Silverstone averaged 19.44 per race. Afterwards, 8.07.
And what
was that? Technical directive? Much. I mean, you know, it just, like, you could just plot those numbers and not be a mathematician and go, looks like something happened right about here, doesn't it?
Oh, I like these. So the 2014, the big conspiracy with this was that Sebastian Vettel had a release clause that meant that he had to do badly to get out of his Red Bull contract. So he had to finish third or below or something. And that's why Ricardo was able to beat him. That's why he tanked his results. So, like, I do think these things happen. We obviously know that who's the Renault driver who went into the wall, Singapore 2008. Come on, Matt, you got this.
This would be what's his name, Junior.
Yeah, that's about Junior. As far as we've both
Junior.
Got.
Junior.
Unbelievable.
PK.
Nelson PK Junior. There you go. Crashing into the wall. So cheating does happen. You know, people do things to cause safety cars, but the culture is less, we're not allowed to, because my goodness, that would be ungentlemanly. Why would they do that? So I like the perspective that in American sports, you can just go, no, that sucks.
Yeah, well, also you can use tanking as an excuse, like, hey, we're not bad. We're trying to lose. This is actually a smart strategy we're doing here. As long as we don't get caught and get any sort of penalty, like, this, my team's not that bad. We're just, we're doing this on purpose, guys. We're bad on purpose.
And with the CFD restrictions, with the lower teams getting more wind tunnel time, I think that has actually proved to be quite ineffective. But if they were to make that success ballast even stronger and say, okay, actually your cost cap is now bigger if you finish lower, and you can have 100% compared to 50% wind tunnel time. If they did stuff like that sort of makes a bit of sense, because the whole wind tunnel thing didn't really make sense from a British sporting point of view. But when you put it in the context of your draft pick system, where you're deliberately giving the bottom teams more of a chance, that all kind of makes sense now. How sneaky, how American of Liberty.
Yeah, actually, that's a great idea and something that I was talking to my boyfriend about this morning when I told him I was coming on this podcast. I was like, the way to like Americanize this would be to force the drivers into a pool every year. And, you know, if you're bad enough, you get the best driver. But it doesn't work quite the same. It's not really a one-to-one thing. And I think in American football or basketball, it's not quite the same thing either. Some organizations are just run much better than other organizations. And no matter what their draft spot is, they will have a better chance of winning because they're simply just doing it better than the bad teams that get one good player. So it's kind of similar in that way. But yeah, of course, like you'd have to also put all the engineers into one group and like divvy them up that way, or put like money in a pool, like you said, or do some other sort of way to balance it out. And those things are probably much harder to convince the top teams to agree to.
So you got the F1 teams roaming the grounds of Loughborough University going, oh yeah, no, that's going to be my first draft pick for the engineering draft, Matt.
The cost cap is the one that I like. I think the wind tunnel CFD thing was a good step. But the problem you have there, and I know this from talking to people, is you could do something like rewrite software, and suddenly you get five times the computing power that you previously had for analysis and stuff like that. So it's still open to better teams having more resource, being able to lean on those things. But if you said, okay, team at the back gets 100% of the cost cap, and then you go down in increments of like 2.5% till you get to the number one team, only get 75% of the spend of the last team. Now you're also making a very, very big difference. And people are going to complain because then you're firing. They're going to say, oh, they'll just fire all the engineers. You're like, no, they just can't do as much testing and stuff like that.
I feel like you just said what I said, but way longer and more American-y. That's how I feel. Better. That's how better. Oh,
thank
okay.
you. Better. Wow. Yeah, there we Darn go.
It. Okay, so the thing I'm learning here about the difference between UK sports and American sports is, and it's been such an education, I think, for F1 fans seeing it, is that British sports, we don't care how boring it is. And probably European sports, like we don't care about a 0-0 draw. And actually, one of the most exciting things I can remember in my sporting history was 5-day cricket test match, and Phil Tufnell, a bowler, had to go into bat, and there was only one wicket left, and they had to sit and just defend and block every single ball for 8 hours a day for 2 days. And it was like the greatest sporting achievement ever. Nothing happened for 2 days, and we couldn't have celebrated harder. But that, I think, that just wouldn't be abided in the US. So it's really interesting to see that perspective. How long will US fans tolerate an F1 where one person's disappearing off into the background?
I think your implication is that we're stupid and we have short attention spans. I'm just kidding. But I think really it's hard to tell. Like by all the metrics that I've read in Sports Business Journal and other places that tries to track like Formula One interest, it is really hard to tell where the interest is. Of course, like the races in the US have been very well attended, even Las Vegas, despite there being some massive issues with that entire race, which I'm sure you've already been over. And I know you have because I listened to the show. But the attendance is doing well. The ratings are up compared to pre-pandemic numbers and slightly lower than in 2022, when Max obviously was dominating, but he didn't win pretty much every single race like he did last year.
Yeah, we had hope
like
at the beginning.
10 in a row. Yeah, or whatever it ended up being. I don't even remember. So it's interesting to try to hypothesize like where the breaking point will be. If it is like three races into 2024, if he wins all three of them, people will just shut it off until next year. I'm not really sure, but I do think no matter what, you have this automatic level of intrigue in 2025 with Lewis Hamilton trading teams, and that's going to be a huge boost no matter what happens the rest of the season. Although, of course, Formula One doesn't want there to be this huge
dead year
ratings drop off. They don't want this year to not matter at all. And I think that may happen to a small extent if midway through the season we have just seen Red Bull completely dominate everyone again and again and again.
Not even Red Bull, Max. If it's a close fight between Perez and Verstappen, somehow, magically, I mean, it was at Saudi Arabia's race last year. I don't know if you remember the race last year, but Max had to start way in the back. He caught Perez, and they were both turning in lap times, and their engineers were going like, so we've talked to the other side of the garage, and you guys could both slow down a little bit here. And they're like, Sure thing, no problem. Oh, I just set my fastest lap of the race. It was amazing. But the problem is we have no intra-team competition between Perez and Verstappen, and we don't have anyone else quite ready to step up and play that role from another team.
I think there's a big difference, though, between the people who've come on board and have become hardcore fans and are a bit addicted to it, and then the casual fans. And that it's perfectly okay to be casually in and out of a sport. So like, I would be like that with Formula E. If I miss it, it's not the end of the world. But if I'm like, oh, it's on and I'm at home, you know, I'll watch it. And which set of fans do you value more? Because I think what we've found is that F1 is probably at risk of losing a lot of the more casual fans, but the hardcore fans still seem to be there. So it's a difficult balancing act, really.
It is difficult. And in ESPN, which is our biggest sports broadcaster, signed a humongous increased rights deal with Formula One that expires at the end of 2025, I believe. So I think, you know, as long as they're continuing to sell a lot of tickets to events, which seems like something that they expect to do, now that there's three races, I know there's questions of oversaturation and whatnot in the market.
No, that's stupid.
ESPN, but
of American races.
Correct, of American races.
Daftest argument I've heard from people that there's too many American races because you're a huge nation with loads of people.
It's a humongous country. I agree. Three different states, three different parts of the country, three different like regions, people coming from different parts of the country to see them. Like they're very different and they're very different experiences.
Yeah, and also
Vegas Strip in Austin have nothing in common.
No, it's not even close, but I think what people don't realize in Europe is just how many American fans there are now. I think people really underestimate that. So most, and it's not even close, most of our listeners now are American. And I don't know if, you know, people are quite switched on to that. I think there's probably more American F1 podcast listeners than there are European podcast listeners.
Yeah. And to be honest, like I think Formula One's probably okay with losing some of the casual fans, not maybe forever, but I think they are okay with losing them for maybe a small portion of time, as long as the U.S. brands continue to pump money into the sport. I think that is such an important thing and why Formula One wants to attract American fans and American companies. It's just like they can slap a logo on anything here and sell anything and sell any race experience or any sort of tangential Formula One related thing here, and people will buy it.
Last question to you Americans, and you speak for all Americans.
I know, it's terrifying. I don't know why.
The increased amount of races and sprint races is bothering a lot of us older F1 fans because we're used to 10 races in the 80s, 16 races in the 90s, and then it's starting to edge up and edge up. We can't abide missing a race. So in your US sports fandom, do people tune into every throw hand egg game, every basketball game?
I mean, it's hard to even, it's hard to explain. It depends. Like the NFL has its own channel on Sundays that just blasts every single football game that's happening into your brain at one time. It's called the Red Zone. It's awesome. You sit on your couch.
I've been told to watch this.
You just watch touchdowns and field goals and muff punts all day long. And
they just go to whoever has some action at the moment. They
basically
go to that one.
Yeah, that's the gist of it. Fans make appointment television watching for big, you know, NFL games. The NBA is kind of like in its own kind of mini crisis right now because fans are not watching as many regular season games and only tuning into the finals, and that's a whole else. Separate thing. So it's hard to answer that question, but I think American fans are probably okay skipping out on a sprint race here and there. I think honestly the appeal of F1 to American fans is that it's a contained two-hour event on Sunday mornings when there's really not a lot of American programming on outside of maybe your random German NFL game in September that's gonna be on at the same time. It's just a good window for Americans to have something to watch. And I think part of the reason why, you know, Premier League has taken off in the United States is the same way. It kind of scratches an itch.
I see. And it slots into a nice sort of time period. Yeah, F1's a morning sport for you guys, isn't it? It's a coffee sport.
It's great.
No, we're definitely afternoon beer garden kind of affair over here. Guys, thank you so much for this and giving us this perspective. If you're not following Jessica, you absolutely need to. We're going to give you the links in the show notes below. But you're on this wonderful show that I don't understand at all, which I just keep seeing clips of and it keeps making me laugh. It's the Dan Le Batard show, and it's kind of it feels like a generalist sports show, but, and I mean this in the nicest way, it's like a sports zoo.
Yes, I think that's fair.
Zoo radio, isn't it? With just crazy. A lot of
And I just got done doing like 5 hours of television on that show. So if I at any point didn't make any sense, I fully
we appreciate it.
Not surprised at all.
But go and check that out, because you post like cool clips of it, and it always makes me laugh. And make sure you go and follow her. And it's just been weird since the whole DTS stuff. It's been a clashing of worlds between, you know, American media and European media. So I hope we'll get you on again. And also, I suppose, go and follow Matt if you must. I've given up getting people to follow you. I think we just got to accept they don't like you. You're not popular.
I know. What can I say? Just
follow Matt. He's a great follower.
Oh my goodness. Ruined it. Thanks a lot, Jess. You're not welcome back at all. Of course, follow me. Spanner's ready. I'm the best one. We will see you for some Patreon content on Friday. Worse. Book extra content, and we have a merch line, Wrong But First. I'm wearing the t-shirt now. You can get Whose Fault Is It? There's a Spanners Is the Best One t-shirt coming up, and a Work Hard Be Kind Have Fun. Go and check out the show notes if that's interests you, but if not, we will see you a little bit later on Sunday, maybe 9:30, and we will have Stuffy, Christina and Matt with our Saudi Arabian Grand Prix race review. Until we see you next, work hard, be kind and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast. I appreciate your time, and we didn't stay even close to what I promised. Sorry.
That's all right. I know you have another show after this, so I'll...
Yeah, but it's only the science one. It's okay. It's just Andrew could be making things up. I wouldn't know.
I'm going to listen to it. I always understand like half of it. And that's okay.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.